Kaya, Wanju, hello, welcome to another episode of The Curb. My name's Andrew F. Pierce, and this is the podcast where I bring you in-depth interviews with filmmakers, creatives, and creators of culture. This podcast is recorded in Boorloo, Western Australia. Sovereignty never ceded. When we think of Australian cinema, one of the films that springs to mind is an iconic film about a family, a house, and the housing crisis that the local community finds themselves in. A house is a home, or so goes the iconic saying in the 1997 comedy, The Castle. Oddly, Australian cinema has not returned to the well of housing crisis comedies, an oddity given how pointed and frustratingly timeless the reality of the housing market is. Maybe some find it hard to laugh at, but not me. So, thankfully, Zoe Pepper mines the generational wealth divide for all it's worth in the acidic WA-made comedy, Birthright. Corey, a perfectly cast deadpan Travis Jeffrey, and his very pregnant wife Jasmine, an equally deadpan and delightful Maria Angelico, are getting the shaft from their rental. They've been evicted. Stuffed in more ways than one, they load up all they can into the boot of their car and trundle off to the sanctuary of Mum and Dad, Corey's baby boomer parents, Richard and Lynn. Again, pitch-perfect casting of Michael Hurst and Linda Cropper. Corey's parents live in a swanky abode in a leafy green suburb somewhere in Perth. Their house has more rooms than they need, with costly, barely-used furniture swaddled in sheets and blankets to protect them from dust. Their home feels, well, a little soulless, like the misused result of decades of wealth accumulation. By any other name, they might be called hoarders. And that's partly why Corey and Jasmine have come knocking. They not only need a home, but they also need a good old Dick and Lynn to make good with their duty as parents and give space for the younger generation to come through and live their life. Ah, but of course, these are baby boomer parents who managed to pull themselves up from their own bootstraps and buy a house on nothing at all and have a family and a secure and well-paying job, and now, after all, they should be able to enjoy their retirement because it's what they worked hard for all these years. They deserve it. I can hear your teeth gritting in frustration. And so can Zoe Pepper, with the seasoned theatre talent comfortably making the shift to filmmaking and bringing a bitterly comedic story to life in the process. Slipping into a slightly misguided analogy for a moment, Birthright is the result of spritzing an acid dressing over an aged Women's Weekly Sunday salad recipe. It cuts through like the generational divide it needs to, burning it down in a manner that will have you picking up the phone to call your parents after the credits have rolled. And no, you're not calling them to say how much time you want to spend with them or how much you love them, but rather to say, how can you not see what your generation has done to us? And maybe, if your relationship isn't as collegial as you might think, you can also throw in a fuck you too. We turn to art and cinema to make sense of the now and provide a sanity check for our shitty situations. We watch films like Birthright to get a validation from an external source, leading us to Leonardo DiCaprio this shit and point at the screen and say, hey, that's me. All the while popcorn flies out of our mouths as we stifle the laughter. Birthright is so utterly refreshing in the manner that swings to the fences, hitting a six that is for the history books. I couldn't help but unleash my praise on Zoe in the following interview, one which explores the foundations of the film, its relevance to now, the casting process, and the joys of bringing dark comedy to life on screen. I also apply a misreading of the film about a rock that Richard holds during one scene, summoning the name of one Scott Morrison and alluding to his infamous embrace of coal in Parliament House. But that's a critical reading, and one that I really look forward to seeing a little bit more of as this film hits audiences and rolls out into the world. Because this is a film that will shine with an audience, and it's one that I hope that Aussie audiences do seek out and go and see. Now, I'll get the first chance to do so on Thursday the 12th of June, with two more sessions on the 13th and 14th of June at the Sydney Film Festival. Check out sff.org.au for tickets and more details. And here's the hard sell about what we do as well. If you want to find out more of what we do on The Curb, then head over to thecurb.com.au or follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Blue Sky at TheCurbAU. We are a completely independent and ad-free website that lives on supportive listeners and readers just like yourself. We do not have wealthy parents to leech off, so alas, we turn to our followers on patreon.com/thecurbau to support us from as little as $1 a month. Every little bit goes towards helping keep this place an independent website. But if you're unable to financially support us, hey, I understand, cost of living crisis and all that, then please consider sharing this interview with your film-loving friends. I really love this film, Birthright, and I hope that you enjoy the following conversation. So if you also enjoy it, then please head over and rate and review us on a podcast player of your choice. I believe that Apple is the place to do it. I'm an Android person, so I'm a little bit agnostic about that particular field of technology, but nonetheless, I'm sure that like you out there who have been able to give some tech advice to your parents, you'll know what to do when it comes to an Apple device. Every review helps us amplify the interviews and stories from filmmakers to a wider audience. Right, that's enough rambling for me and a little bit too much of the, enthusiasm. But nonetheless, here's the trailer for Birthright, followed by my chat with writer-director Zoe Pepper.
Mom. Dad.
How did you get in?
Mom, it's me, your son.
What are you doing here?
We were wondering if we could, stay here. Maybe it'd be better for the baby.
Oh, that's it.
When I was 20 years old, I bought this house and it was nothing. I built this life.
Oh, sometimes my parents want to be a bit too involved.
We appreciated what we had. And then bit by bit, we turned one jacket, one jumper into a whole house.
Two investment properties.
How much longer do you think you'll be staying for? How many nights?
Should have bought years ago.
Yes, Dad, I know.
This is a shakedown. You're never gonna leave.
So important to have family support. Kids take everything you've got. And then a little bit more.
You think we don't know what you're doing? We know exactly what's going on.
It's a game.
So let's play.
I just want to go home.
Quiet! Stop!
We can't leave. This is my family.
What was the original point for you to say, I want to become a filmmaker and a storyteller for the screen?
It was really about having ideas that felt more like films than theatre after having worked in theatre for a long time. And also I think it took a long time to get the confidence to think that this was something that was tangible, that I could actually achieve. So, yeah, I've been kicking around with wanting to make a feature film for a very long time, as a lot of storytellers have. And it took a while to kind of hone my writing skills and have something that felt like it was worthy of that much money and worthy of being on the screen. That feels like a big part of the shift between theatre and film. It's like the price point on your story means it feels like there needs to be so much more rigor involved. So that was an important factor. But yeah, really it was about coming up with different ideas that felt better suited to different forms.
Did you then have to kind of change your way of thinking from transitioning from theatre to film as well?
Yeah, yes and no. Look, I feel like earlier short form things that I've directed for screen were more me trying to like make the shape of a filmmaker, trying to work outside my skill set. And then with Birthright, yes, absolutely, it was a big big shift and a big learning curve, but I also really stayed true to my strengths as a theatre maker and my tone and style that I've developed as a theatre maker, and I think that's what made Birthright work.
So let's talk about where the idea for it came about. I mean, it's fairly textual. I can see that it's in relation to a lot of the kind of societal issues that are going on at the moment. But from your perspective, where did the idea for the story for Birthright come from?
It was really watching a lot of people that I know, family, friends, kids moving back in with the parents, and this knowing that there was kind of this intergenerational, everyone's living under the same roof, and wondering how the power dynamics of that playing out when it seems like it was intended to be a short stay, and then inevitably it kind of drags on, and the two generations end up living together. And it's quite complex in that I think everyone inevitably regresses when they move back home, and there's kind of all those dynamics that of behavior, of human behavior and dynamics between parents and children that make it not as straightforward as two couples of different generations living under the one roof. So that was the kind of the kernel on a microcosm, you know, in terms of the microcosm of this family dynamic, but then also really wanting to think about the macro and thinking about how to tell a story that feels relevant to, particularly to my generation and my experience of kind of like seeing this massive kind of chasm of inequality develop over the last 15 years in a way that kind of feels like it's really out of control and growing exponentially, and wanting to put that into a story, and Birthright seemed like a really good vehicle for that.
There's moments in it which felt like a mirror. Like I'd experienced exactly that. I got divorced, ended up moving back in home with my parents for a year or so, and exactly the same kind of things that go on with some of the characters here, where it's just this notion of like, I thought I was an adult, but suddenly I'm back to being, it feels like I'm 10 years old in some regards. And then the mindset of an older generation being so out of touch with the younger generation. My mum, bless her, love her a lot, but she had also said something along the lines of, well, why don't you just go and buy a house? And it's like, well, it's not that easy. And so all these things of the disconnected nature, but then also reverting back to a younger mindset is really well explored here. Can you talk about, I mean, you've kind of already touched on it, but that notion of bringing those into the spotlight and giving them space to feel like they can be discussed and explored on screen. How important is that?
Well, it was important that it's not homework, and that it's not kind of a message, you know, like, yes, it's absolutely about something, but primarily it's entertaining. And I think part of that is about looking at there is the kind of the materialistic aspect to inequality, but there's also the emotional and the psychological aspect to this kind of growing inequality. And how does that, and to think about inequality as about an inequality of status as well as materialistic wealth, and how does that impact on a person's psyche? If you think about someone like Corey, who's probably his greatest flaw is just that he's not exceptional. You know, he's just a regular guy who had a regular job, and to succeed in the baby boomers generation, I think you didn't have to be exceptional necessarily, whereas it seems more necessary in our current generation, or not in the millennial generation. And so it's kind of like him wrestling with that and feeling like constantly like a failure, and coming up against that kind of that psychological hurdle and how that affects his psyche is something that I wanted to explore, rather than it being more about kind of like, you know, issues based film viewer. Yeah.
Well, as you said, it's not homework, right? It's entertainment. And that's what I think for me is so refreshing, is how comedic, and not just comedic, but how darkly comedic the film is. And it feels like there's a bit of boundary pushing taking place here, which I really appreciate it. I love to see Australian films getting to explore what comedy can do, but also to say, this is, you know, the sense of good taste, let's push it just a little bit further. Can you talk about that importance of bringing comedy to life on screen with this particular story? How important is that for you?
Look, it feels very like hard-baked into my style, in a way that, you know, it's just kind of true of life that it has to walk the line, and I guess it's using comedy as a way in and to create that entertainment and to kind of maintain the pace But ultimately, you're using it as a vehicle to explore more dramatic subjects and topics of substance. So that's kind of how I think about comedy. Is it's kind of like it's a way to invite the audience into the world and into the tone of the world, and probably to make the distinction between, I guess I think about it as humor rather than comedy. Like it's sort of a more subtle, and it's baked in there with the music cues and everything, rather than being broadly comedic. It's more kind of like deploying humor as a vehicle to hook the audience in and kind of make them feel for the characters, even if they are being obnoxious.
Yeah. Your cast is phenomenal here too. I'd love to talk about the obviously the casting process is important, but on top of that, the rehearsal process. So how did you go about making sure you had the right four people for this family? And then we'll talk about the rehearsal process too.
Yeah, the casting was tough, eh? And finding Corey was tough, like wanting someone who isn't your kind of typical leading man, mainly because I was really looking for that vulnerability. And yeah, I found it interesting that the how this understanding of vulnerability just got conflated with crying, and that it's, to me, it's much more nuanced and there's a lot more to it than just kind of like being able to cry on cue. And so I think Corey's vulnerability was a big selling point, that he kind of could play the beta man essentially to his dad, who is, you know, as most fathers, well, a lot of fathers are, kind of his idol for so much of it. And it is in a way the death of his idol, as his dad kind of humiliates him to the point of infinity. And then there's no returning from that. Then kind of that's the real power shift, where Corey starts to kind of take back that power. So yeah, that was tricky. And Corey was kind of the linchpin in trying to find that level of vulnerability. And then in terms of casting or everyone else, it was also about finding actors who were happy to go to extremes, which was hard actually in the auditions. Like it seems like a gear that is not used that often in Australia, like for Australian actors. So to push them to be as big as I wanted them to be was a bit of a challenge actually throughout the audition process.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, that's one of the things which I have felt is, as you're saying, like that heading into that next gear of kind of the comedy and also pushing the limits of what we usually see on screen. And it makes it sound like it's really hard kind of stuff, but Australian cinema is kind of, I hesitate to use the word afraid, but there has almost been this sense of fear of like, how far can we take the audience? And your ability to take them to these kinds of places makes it so delightful. I think of like Audrey, for example, from last year, which is also another film that kind of takes us to levels where it's like, hey, sure, we're usually not asked to laugh at this kind of thing, but here we are inviting you to do that. And it's so, so powerful. It makes it feel so fresh and exciting. I love that part. Yeah. It kind of leads in the second part, which is talking about getting the cast into the mindset of it, which is rehearsals. So how did you make sure that they were able to stay fresh on the day, and how much rehearsal time did you have ahead of shooting?
We had a lot of rehearsal time, which I used as true rehearsal time, which was unexpected, I think, to a lot of people. So we did 2 weeks rehearsal. 1 week of it was on location in the house. And yeah, I think the actors were quite shocked. They were like, oh, we're actually really rehearsing, because I think coming from theatre, that's what I'm used to doing. As opposed to rehearsals that are costume fittings and all sorts of other things. So it meant that there was an opportunity to work with the actors to help find the tone and kind of better understand the sense of humour, that, yeah, to play it straight, play it like a drama, and the humour kind of is a little just tucked away, it's hidden under there, and to play for laughs and play overt comedy is just absolutely not the way we were going. So we really needed that time for the actors to kind of all be in the same film and all understand the tone.
Yeah, I mean, again, that tone means so much, and the music as well plays into it, which you've talked about a little bit. But then there's also subtext too, which I really appreciate the little nods that you've got to, like, the millennial malaise in different ways. There's a shot of the father kind of caressing I'm going to assume it's a chunk of coal. And he's sitting at his desk and he picks up a chunk of coal, and it's like, I don't know, I got this image of Scott Morrison in my mind there for a moment, and just this notion of this, again, the added conflict of our generation versus the older generation, and this notion of you've taken everything and we've got nothing. It's so, so delightful. So, yeah, I guess on a really textual level, was that a chunk of coal?
No, not a chunk of coal, but that is a thing. I actually thought that people might read it as that. It's some special rock, like, right. Richard as a geologist who made his money through geological exploration. So, yeah, he's meant to just be picking up this fancy rock. But, yeah, I can absolutely see how you read it as coal.
I hope I've not, skewed things or anything. But it's just, again, this notion of, like, to me, because it's a WA film, right, and... Mm. This the beautiful surroundings as well, which I assume was shot in the hills. It looks like kind of Kalamunda-ish area. And then this, to me, that's why I was bringing this notion of mining as a subtext of like, that's what WA is. So I'm curious for you as a WA filmmaker, what it means to then be able to explore this kind of story on screen from a WA perspective. It is a universal story across Australia, but like for WA audiences, there feels like something distinct about it.
I mean, yeah, I guess leaning on geology as his profession, not that we really get into that, because, I mean, and also the reason it's not pinpointed as to the professions of any of these characters is because in a way they are largely representative of a generation. So the lack of specificity is intentional to kind of let them be a figurehead for a group of people. And in the same sense, whilst I am West Australian, I don't particularly think of it as a West Australian story. And I hope that it does transcend the state in that sense. Not feel like an Australian story that doesn't communicate to people who aren't from here. And that's very true of my theatre work as well, that it was often said that it's not really an Australian story because it doesn't feel particularly Australian, is a lot of the feedback I would get on my tone and style in theatre. And I think that's kind of true of Birthright as well. And whilst I'm not going out of my way to not be West Australian, I think that's just not front of mind and not something that I'm striving to do.
It's good. I mean, I ask people this quite often, like about the regionality of where they come from and telling stories from it. And it doesn't mean that you need to be telling something from a Western Australian perspective, but I find it more a curiosity on the level of going, all right, well, how is the story told from here? With that in mind, you're working with Cody Greenwood as a producer, but in particular, Cody's choice of films that she's worked on and supported and brought to life has been quite great. The library of films that she's got is quite something, and Birthright's another great entry in there. What's it like working with Cody and, you know, with her as a producer on this?
Oh, she's great. Like, I really love working with Cody, and we've found a way of working together that's incredibly frank and transparent and honest, and all things that I really appreciate in a working relationship. And she really values the creative and will strive and go above and beyond to do things for the film that are going to put more value on screen, and I really appreciate that, and that she will, you know, deal with my procrastinating and my kind of like insistence on on, you know, particular details and understand the importance of that and back me. Which is really great. And we're working together on another film. So it's been a great success with this, right? It's working together. Yeah. It's a really great thing.
Yeah. I mean, that's great to see. Cause again, whenever I see her name as a producer, I'm like, well, I know I'm going to get something that's going to be great and interesting as well. But there's a real kind of women-led perspective here too, which is really important. Can you talk about the importance of being able to have supportive, creative women on producing capacity and on set too?
Yeah, I'm trying to, it doesn't feel that, from the inside, it doesn't feel that woman heavy across the different departments. But it is important and absolutely important, especially working with Cody, that they're, you know, we value each other so much and value that each of us have expertise that the other one doesn't. And so on that level, I think just that the respect that's there, which is probably in part from being women as well as just being two people who like and respect each other, made for a really smooth time and also made for, it was great to have a producing team that had my back, you know, at all stages of the process.
I want to swap over to talking about the score, which we kind of alluded to before. James Peter Brown does the score, and I absolutely love it because to me, at least, it feels almost like a Danny Elfman-esque tone to it. Like it felt like the early 90s kinds of comedies were pushing boundaries in some regard. Can you talk about the directional guidance that you gave James to create the score?
Yeah, I mean, James started working on it really early on, and we actually had some of the pieces of music that we could play while we were shooting. I wanted to kind of give a rhythm to the performance and the pacing, so we had those pieces of music really early on. And yeah, James was great. Like, the music is exceptional. I think he's done a really fantastic job. And I really wanted the music to be an entry point for the audience to understand the emotion of the film and to kind of have a sense of grandeur that let you into essentially the melodrama of Birthright. So yeah, it was working with James, knowing that I wanted it to be largely orchestral for that same kind of have that operatic or a grand operatic sense. I went over to Sydney and spent a long time working with James to hone it. I gave him a real hard time, but we came out the other end. It was good.
I mean, yeah, I love it because it's, as you're saying, like it sets a tone, right? And there's something that's really playful about it, but it's also really serious too. And it's like you can have fun, but it's also, it's this tonal balance,
yeah,
which the film also does too, which comes back to the straight kind of performances which lean into the comedy. It's this tonal balance, which is really hard. Was there a point where you knew that you had that balance right?
No, I mean, look, I feel like I've been training in this tone for a very long time. And I would hate to, or not hate, to just start out and try and go straight to making a feature film and try and like land the tone. My God, that would be hard. But to come off the back of making, you know, a decade of theatre in this tone, I think held me in good stead to understand the balance. And also understand that, you know, I don't think I was a very good short filmmaker in part because the rhythms of that pace of storytelling were so unfamiliar, whereas the rhythm of storytelling at a kind of more of a feature length is much more my territory and what I'm much more used to.
Sydney, you'll be screening there. What's it mean to be able to have it screened at Sydney Film Festival?
Oh, it's great. It's amazing. Like, so we play Tribeca next week and then Sydney Film Festival the week after. And I'm really excited to show it to an Australian audience. Like, so the few people that have seen it, which is not many actually, we did the cast and crew screening a couple of days ago. And the people that didn't know the script or hadn't worked on the film that were there as you said, were like, it felt like you snuck into my family home and recorded our conversations. Like, I think it will resonate with an Australian audience on that level. Like, so many people tell me that they've pretty much had that conversation word for word with their parents or with their friends. So yeah, it's exciting to see how it will land with an Australian audience, knowing that it speaks so close to home.
You mentioned Tribeca too. Like, I guess taking it to an international audience as well has got to be fairly interesting and exciting as well.
Yeah, definitely, to see how it will resonate with a US audience. And on that level, like, yeah, because Australia is so hung up on housing, that whether the more archetypal story of the power struggle between father and son, between young and old, whether that comes to the fore more than the housing crisis, which is kind of very topical in Australia, but also, I mean, the housing crisis extends to other countries, but Australia has really really cooked it.
Yeah. Like,
it's exceptionally bad here. I think it sits front of mind when you watch the film in Australia, but I'm interested to see how it resonates in an international context.
Loved it. Absolutely delightful. So congratulations on the film. Yeah, it's been a delight to be able to talk with you.
Yeah, me too. Oh, cool. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks everybody for listening to the chat with Zoe Pepper. Her film Birthright screens at the Sydney Film Festival from the 12th to the 14th of June 2025, sff.org.au, where you can get tickets and everything else. For other interviews and reviews, visit thecurb.com.au. Please rate, review and share this interview with your film-loving friends. We hope they like it as much as you have. I'll see you on the next one.